May it please the court. My name is Jeff Kaufman. I represent St. Margaret Mercy Healthcare Centers, which is an acute care hospital in northwest Indiana. This case involves the hospital's request or petition for this court to review and vacate a decision by the National Labor Relations Board. We also ask that the court deny the board's cross motion for enforcement. Now, the board ruled that the hospital committed three unfair labor practices during a union organizing campaign in the year 2000. There are three issues.
Is there a floor plan of the hospital in the record?
We have floor plans of the intensive care units on the North Campus and the South Campus. And the South Campus ICU is probably was the most heavily litigated area. That floor plan is at tab 6 of the short appendix. Now, there are three issues. First.
Tab 6?
Tab 6.
I only have two tabs.
There's a short appendix separate from our brief.
Oh, a separate appendix. Okay.
Now, there are three issues. One, whether a written counseling given to RN, or registered nurse, Deborah Planus, for soliciting union card signatures during work time in the intensive care unit was unlawful.
So what is the distance between, say, a patient's, the closest patient's room and this break, whatever you call it, room for
taking a break? Oh, the multipurpose room, Your Honor?
Yeah.
I didn't
notice that in the brief.
Testimony by one witness that it was about 18 to 20 feet.
What would be in between the patient's room and the...
An open corridor, just open space. Now, there were some nurses' stations where they're called modules, but they're not so high that you can't see
right
over them. That's where nurses would sit, when those were monitors.
So the nurses are in the middle between the patients' rooms and this break, this kind of lounge.
Correct. They would go in there to, fill out charts, maybe eat a sandwich, have a cup of coffee, but the door generally would remain open. They'd take their breaks in there with the door open so that they could continue to monitor patients and be available if needed. So that's the second issue in the case is whether a verbal counseling to a nurse to tell her not to loudly voice her opinions that the hospital is lying about the evaluation process when done within direct earshot of a patient in bed in the intensive care unit, whether that was unlawful. And the final issue, which you alluded to, Judge Posner, is whether the multipurpose rooms or break rooms that are within the confines of these patient care units are also immediate patient care areas, is that phrase.
Reason, by the way, why the parties can't even agree on the name of these rooms. It's sometimes hard to get agreement on the law, but you should be able to agree on what these rooms are called.
Well, I think they were called multipurpose rooms by management to reflect the fact that while there are breaks in there, there also is our work activities in there. You'll note that on the floor charts, there are even other terms. On the floor plans, some of these, one room is called the reporting room. That's Respondents Exhibit 4, which is at the short appendix, tab 6. And on tab 4, which is Respondents Exhibit 2, it's called a classroom class consultation. So we'll just call them, for sake of, we can all agree, we'll just call them break rooms. It doesn't matter to me what they're called. The point is, where are they located? And they are located immediately adjacent to treatment areas. They are located within 2 feet of corridors through which gurneys are pushed with patients going to or from treatment, through which patients may walk, who are ambulatory, and it's part of their recovery to walk. And it's within direct earshot what happens in the multipurpose rooms. Now, I'd like to turn to the union card issue. Now, in April 2000, a month before the election that the union lost...
What about the... with regard to Nurse Planas,
yes.
Whatever her name is. So the board says that your vice president, Sandy Golunka, talked about union matters at the nurse's station. I didn't see that you commented on that.
Well, the board has a rule that management can pass out. Management is not subject to the same rules that apply to employees. So the fact that...
doesn't make any sense if your concern is with upsetting employees. I mean, I'm upsetting the patients and their families. That is, if they don't want to hear, if they're going to be disturbed hearing union organizers going around soliciting nurses to join unions, they'll also be disturbed by management denouncing the union, the nurses unions in their earshot, right?
Well,
it's symmetrical.
Well, it, ironically, it's not symmetrical. In fact, the board actually did not adopt that portion of the ALJ's decision, in which the ALJ found that management distribution of anti-union materials was somehow relevant to show that passing out of pro-union material should have been allowed. The board recognized you can't compare the two. The same principle applies to the vice president's
talk. But
what
the board said, I think it's the board. Well, there was the dissenting chairman, but I think this was... He said a hospital has a legitimate interest in not having employer-employee disputes aired within earshot of patients. That's certainly true. How could that rule be defended as neutral and not an anti-union rule if it's not applied to management?
Well, I don't think there is any evidence in the record, Your Honor, that management engaged in the kind of conduct that is comparable
well,
to what
Plenus
engaged
in. What's the difference between Golunka and Plenus?
Plenus solicited another nurse.
I know what Plenus did, but what did Golunka do that was different?
It's alleged that she had a conversation with some nurses near the nurse's station saying why she believed it wasn't necessary to have a union. Now, it may have been. There was no context in the record. That was part of the general counsel's case. And there was no showing or evidence that this was done loudly, that there were patients nearby, that anybody objected. I mean, it may have been that the vice president of nursing chose a good time to have such a conversation. And since it's part of management's job to decide when's a good time, when's a bad time, and it has that right to hold mandatory meetings, for example, there's nothing, they can't be considered equivalent. They can't be considered to have to be on the same plane.
Well, I don't understand. What if Plenus and Golunka, maybe that's not the, I'm not suggesting that's the facts, what if Plenus and Golunka say exactly the same thing, except in Galanka's statement, the word not appears.
I don't think if Plenus, during her break, had conversation about the pros and cons of the union, that's just talk. There's no discipline for that. Soliciting a union card is different from just talk. And the discipline was based on the fact that twice In the middle of the intensive care unit, she solicited the same nurse to sign a card, and the second time, the solicited nurse, who said, no, I don't want to sign a card, and plaintiff said, but I'm serious, got in her face, the second nurse became so upset that she went and reported it to management and said, I don't think it's appropriate. I'm just trying to do my job. She felt aggravated. She felt like she was being chased. All of that's in the record. That's significantly different from, you know, a conversation. Now, in the board's 2-1 decision that found the write-up, the written counseling to plaintiffs to be unlawful, they reasoned that the basis for the discipline was a pretext, and the pretext finding was in turn based on reasoning that the hospital had not disciplined other nurses for such things as taping a collection envelope to the nurse's desk so that nurses could put in money to help a fellow nurse who had just lost two family members. They also compared it to some passive solicitations for the March of Dimes and United Way. I mean, that decision is a travesty. I mean, as this court has held in Guardian Industries, Six West Limited, and Fleming Companies, and as dissenting board chairman Batista agreed, the disparate treatment analysis requires unequal treatment of similar activities.
Well, your rule says employees are prohibited from soliciting other employees at any time in patient care areas. And the nursing stations are patient care areas, right?
Correct.
So, but you don't prohibit any solicitations. You don't seem to prohibit any solicitations that aren't soliciting on behalf of the union. Do you?
I mean,
what non-union solicitations have you prohibited?
What non-union solicitations?
Would they solicit for the Red Cross, for example?
Yes.
First of all, it's not what your rule says. And secondly, it doesn't really fit the logic of your rule.
Well, what we're saying is...
No, because look, if I'm a patient dying or something like that, or family member of a dying patient, I don't want to hear the nurses chatting about their Girl Scout cookies and all this stuff, right?
Yeah, let me...
Is to provide a professional atmosphere where you don't want the patients to think that the nurses are pursuing their own, polishing their nails, talking on the phone to their pals and all that stuff.
Correct,
right?
Your Honor.
But it seems as a practical matter, all you actually care about is union activities.
Well, no, I would go back on my answer. And basically what the record showed was not that the company or the hospital tolerated unlimited solicitation at the nurse's station. Absolutely not.
Unlimited is a very interesting Freudian slip. Because you don't permit even limited union solicitation.
Oh, there was union
you
solicitation.
You forbid all union solicitation some other solicitation.
Union solicitation is allowed in the...
I'm talking about nursing stations.
Nursing stations.
You forbid all union solicitation in nursing stations and some other solicitation.
Very limited and distinguishable other solicitation.
I don't see
occurred.
The distinction. What's the distinction between soliciting for a union and soliciting for the Republican Party?
There is no distinction there, Your Honor. And that did not happen. Soliciting for an outside organization membership, soliciting for a political party, that there's no evidence that that was ever tolerated, and the hospital would not tolerate that. What the only evidence in this record of charitable solicitations...
I would be
passive.
Excuse me. I'd be very surprised if nurses never talked politics. Is there any evidence in this record that the hospital has penalized nurses for asking at a nursing station, who are you going to vote for in the upcoming primary?
No, and there's no evidence that such conversations occurred.
It's impossible to believe such conversations haven't occurred.
I would not doubt it.
Your nurses are, I assume, human rather than automatons. They're not talking about it. There's something wrong with them, and you should get new nurses.
Well, I'm out of time, Your Honor, and I've used my rebuttal time. Sorry about that.
Well, let me pursue that for just a second. Is there any indication of anybody ever having been rebuked for anything except union solicitation?
Yes.
What?
There is evidence that Avon catalogs were picked up and thrown away, inappropriate. There's evidence that...
Well, I'm sorry. Avon catalogs were done with what?
That the supervisor saw the Avon catalogs in the multipurpose room and threw them away.
The question is not whether catalogs were thrown away, but whether people were disciplined for trying to sell Avon products.
No.
Whether people have been disciplined for anything in the history of the hospital except union solicitation.
There was, and there's only one of those. And that's this one.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you.
Ms. Deenan.
Good morning. May it please the Court? My name is Washa Deenan. I represent the Board, which seeks enforcement of its order in this case. In this case, in response to its employees' union organizing, the hospital repeatedly and unlawfully clamped down on their right to communicate about the union as well as other working conditions. Turning first to the break room ban, the hospital's claim that the break rooms were immediate patient care areas is inconsistent with case law as well as its own written policy. The hospital has not cited a single case where a solicitation ban in a break room has been upheld. And more generally, the case has established that immediate patient care areas are areas where patients receive treatment or at least pass through in transit to treatment. And in this case, it's undisputed that the patients don't even enter the break rooms, let alone receive treatment there. And the hospital's own detailed written definition of patient care areas tracks that precedent.
I was struck by a footnote in your brief, page 5, footnote 6. Is some your general counsel... Exhibit 2 is a handwritten sketch admitted despite respondents. I guess, is that your objection? Or?
I'm sorry.
This is the respondent.
This is
you're both petitioners and respondents, aren't you? Because you...
Yes.
Yeah.
Cross petition.
So I don't know whose objection it is. I assume the other side.
The other side
exhibit.
Objected to the drawings, yes.
Yes. Now, it was not drawn to scale. Now, why didn't you have... Why didn't you have a floor plan of it?
We didn't receive.
Did you ask for it? The notion of having a handwritten sketch when the distances are potentially critical seems very strange. So did the board and the administrative law judge, did they rely on your handwritten sketch to determine how far the break rooms were from the patients' rooms?
That was the only diagram that we had in the record. But
my question is your handwritten sketch what the ALJ and the board relied on?
Well, the handwritten sketches were for a couple of the units, and then in some of the other units we did have floor plans.
Why didn't you have the floor plan for this?
Well, Your Honor, honestly, I don't know why we don't have the floor plans for that. I don't know if it was asked for in a subpoena or not. It's not in the record. As I was saying, the hospital's own written definition of patient care areas does not include the break rooms as forbidden areas for solicitation. Instead, the hospital urges a new rule that any area within earshot of patients or even their families should be considered an immediate patient care area. However, adopting such a rule...
Would there be anything wrong with such a rule?
Well, I mean, it would be contrary to the cases that find that even areas that are accessible to patients are not immediate patient care areas if there's no actual patient care occurring there.
A hospital makes a bona fide judgment that they don't want all this chit-chat in areas where patients are or patients' family members can hear it, would the board say that goes too far to restrict organizing activity?
Well, no. I mean, the board does look at evidence as that the hospital could produce to show that the ban was necessary to prevent disruption of care. However, in this case, the hospital has waived argument on that point. Its opening brief does not argue or cite any evidence showing the ban on solicitation in the break room was necessary to prevent disruption of care.
Is this rule of theirs, is this a standard rule? Is this come out of some kind of industry association recommendation, or is it idiosyncratic?
The definition, their definition of patient care area generally tracks what the board said in St. John's Hospital. And I know a number of hospitals track that same language.
Mm-hmm. Do we know how well noise carries in this hospital?
There was a former manager who testified, and she said that the conversations that would occur in the break room would not carry to a patient's room, and that if they thought that it had, they certainly wouldn't have left the door open during staff meetings in which they discussed other patients.
So we have somebody's impression, but we don't actually know.
Well, I don't.
Is what you do is have some kind of conversation or meeting in the break room or multi-purpose room, and then put microphones in the patient's rooms and figure out what degree of attenuation in sound there was.
Audible
it was in the patient room.
Your Honor, the record doesn't have any empirical evidence of that.
For all
sort.
We know, this former supervisor was hard of hearing.
I don't have any evidence on that
many
point.
Many workers,
either.
By the way, think all supervisors are hard of hearing.
That's probably true. Unless there's any other questions on the break room issue, I'd like to turn to the April 2000 discipline that was issued to Ms. Plenner.
Yes, what is the evidence exactly about Galanka? Because you don't have a record citation in your brief where you discuss that.
I believe there's a record citation in the
facts. At least I didn't see it.
Let me find it, Your Honor.
Well, but don't worry about that.
It's
but
on,
what,
I'm sorry,
what
it's
exactly,
on page 11 of our
what
brief.
Is, excuse me?
It's on
what?
Page 11, 10 to the bottom of 10 to the top of 11.
What is the evidence about
The Galanka? Evidence was that Ms. Galanka.
Because you describe it in rather purple language as she was lecturing them and so on. What was?
Well, the language, I mean, that incident involved Ms. Galanka having a discussion at the nurse's station with other nurses, and this was around the time of the union election, and the record showed that she was talking to the nurses, and she stated her opinion that unions were bad for teachers, so the nurses should not vote for it either.
That's okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Plenis was an active union supporter, and it's undisputed that the hospital was aware of that fact. The hospital's hostility towards union organizing is apparent from its other unfair labor practices. And the board, in this case, reasonably found that the hospital had historically ignored violations of its solicitation policy, and that to invoke it for the first time in Ms. Plenis's case was a pretext to retaliate against her. Now, to justify its lack of enforcement of its policy, the hospital now claims that it distinguishes between charitable and union solicitation. However, its written policies do not draw that distinction. They banned all solicitation equally, which reflects the hospital's own judgment that all solicitation is equally disruptive. And prior to Ms. Plenis, no one had ever been disciplined under the solicitation policy. At most, the hospital asked employees to stop, but never actually issued discipline. And as far as Ms. Plenis was concerned, even under this distinction.
I'm a little worried about that distinction you've just drawn, because, of course, one of the issues here was when the hospital did just ask her to stop, what's referred to as the verbal counseling, right? She was doing something that the hospital viewed as too loud, and it asked her to stop. And the board seems to think that that's also a means of coercing workers. I wonder in what sense asking someone to stop talking loudly is a form of coercing workers, again, who try to exercise their rights.
Well, the hospital didn't simply ask her not to talk loudly near a patient's room. What the hospital said was that she should raise her concerns to management instead of talking to her coworkers. And that's where the hospital runs into trouble. It's not the location issue. It's that they were telling her that instead of talking to her coworkers about common working conditions, which is her right under Section 7, that she should keep those discussions restrict those discussions to bringing them to management's concern rather than talking to her coworkers, and that if she continued to do so, she would be subject to corrective action. And that's where the threat comes in.
It sounds like you're saying the problem under the Act was that a supervisor talked the way a supervisor would rather than the way a lawyer would.
I'm sorry, which supervisor? I'm not following, Your Honor.
Delivered this verbal counsel.
Yes. Well, I mean, the problem is the concern in this on this issue is that Ms. Plenis was told not to discuss these issues with her coworkers at all and to bring them instead to management. Not that the conversation or the counseling was not limited to asking her to just keep these conversations away from patient rooms. She was told not to have them at all. And that's the basis of the violation. Unless the court has any other questions, we're prepared to rest on our brief.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. The case is taken under advisement.